Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing, Adam? We haven't really talked about your move much this show. We've been talking about it on Greatest Discovery since that show tends to be a little bit more timely.
Right.
But you've moved down to Los Angeles amidst the pandemic that is gripping the world. So not able to explore your new neighborhood much.
My timing has always been impeccable. Yeah, it's a weird time to have done this for sure. Yeah. But luckily, it's given us plenty to do indoors, you know? Unpacking is a time-consuming indoor project.
Yeah, and you've got nothing but time for that.
Yeah, I am delighted that, the promise of us doing the show together was quickly extinguished once I moved to LA, and we're doing it like we always have, remotely.
Yeah. This is our natural habitat, though. We know how to do this.
It's right. It's right and good.
I have not ventured out to the post office recently because I'm trying to limit how much leaving the house I'm doing.
That's smart.
But you have some pre-pandemic mail there, I'm led to believe.
I do. I found a package that we have not opened on the show, and I thought I would do it for us right now.
That sounds great.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
This is a squishy package from Curtis in Santa Cruz, California.
Hey, it's like I love little, Santa Cruz.
It's like a little throw pillow. I almost hate to open it.
Just use it as an accent pillow on your couch.
I want to apologize to Curtis because I imagine he sent this to us a long, long time ago. And inside, we have got a letter and a couple of t-shirts. Four t-shirts.
Wow.
Here's the letter. To Quark. For information leading to the arrest of noted arms dealer Haggath on or about Stardate 50182 and preventing the deaths of 28 million sentient beings on Palomar, we award you the enclosed tokens of the Federation's esteem. And at the bottom it says United Federation of Planets, Bureau of Awards and Recognition.
Oh, wow. Is this on like official letterhead?
Oh, and then there's another letter in here. It's dated 1/11 of this year.
Wow.
Sorry, Curtis.
We've been busy.
here's what's on that. It says, Dear Ben and Adam, somehow these got delivered to me, but I thought you could make much better use of them. Best wishes for podcast success in 2020. P.S. I know nothing bad will happen this year. Love Curtis.
So. Wow. Curtis, you really got that one wrong.
All right. So these all look to be the same shirt, so I am going to open up one of them. There are two larges and two extra larges.
Wow.
I mean, I understand the assumption, Curtis. And, it looks like our logo was appropriated for this. The shirt says I saved 28 million lives and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. Hey, that's great. I love the reference.
Wow.
How about Quark choosing the path of not murdering 28 million people and all
You'd
of the credit that goes with it.
Yeah.
This is a shirt, unfortunately, Curtis, that I don't know that I could wear in public in these trying times. This may be the most inappropriate shirt I could wear at the moment.
There was a, in the late 90s, a store in downtown Berkeley that sold t-shirts with jokes on them, and
was it a store called Crazy Shirts, which is a name of a store you often see in a tourist town?
It was called T-Shirt Orgy, and
even better.
Yeah, it was you know, like a buy a poster of Farrah Fawcett and a t-shirt with a joke on it kind of place.
Mm.
And at some point I was there with like a friend and they insisted that I buy this shirt that was made to look like a Nike t-shirt, but and it said Just Do It, but it showed a guy jumping off of a building. And I happened to wear that shirt to school on 9/11.
On the actual 9/11?
Yeah, and it was like one of the most uncomfortable feelings I've ever had. because of how off note, like it was already a distasteful t-shirt, and on that particular day, maybe the most distasteful t-shirt.
I mean, sometimes your tangents just conclude in a like, oh, that's really interesting and fun. That might have been your best tangential story you've ever told on the show.
Wow.
Or at least my favorite.
Yeah, I think somebody like lent me something to put over it or something to wear instead of it for the rest of the day, and then it never came out again. I don't even know what happened to that shirt.
Wow. That is incredible. Is that the most embarrassed you've ever been in public wearing an unsuitable garment? That's hard to beat.
That could be it. I haven't thought about that in years. It's something I don't often think about. I think I've suppressed the memory.
Oh, I love that. Just the image of you walking around with your arms crossed the entire day.
Yeah. Made my French teacher cry.
Your shirt?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, nerves were frayed that day, obviously. I'm not trying to make Curtis feel bad.
Yeah, you know what you did? You made him feel better because his shirt isn't as bad as that one.
Yeah, that's what I was going for.
Wow. I think many people who watched today's episode might have felt the same way about it, in that you follow up some real bangers in season 6.
Uh-huh.
You can't really hate it. It's not as bad as many other DS9 episodes, but I don't know, man. Why don't we just get into it?
Let's get into
we'll
it.
We'll talk our way through it.
It's season 6, episode 8, Resurrection.
Realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
We open the show with Kira and Dax doing a little dish, gossiping about some men, including Captain Baudet of the USS Motel 6, being floated as a possible date candidate for a dinner party later.
Captain Baudet has a transparent skull.
Seriously, people, TMI.
You love to hear Captain Baudet being brought up, even here in season 6, a throwaway line. Like, I think that's one of the strengths of this of Deep Space Nine and of The Greatest Generation, is that a throwaway line can become a runner for the rest of the show.
I like that with every reference, there is an additional detail about how terrifying he looks. and all of those add up to the main reason why we will never see him on this show.
Yeah.
At this point, he just looks like Pizza the Hut to me.
Yeah, Dax and Kira need to brainstorm a date for Kira to bring to a dinner party that Dax is throwing. And they just can't come up with someone. It's just, who could Kira be dating?
No one's good enough for Kira. That's my opinion.
You would like to try for it.
In the end, that's sort of where she rests at the end of the episode. Maybe she's just going to go stag.
Hmm. Yeah. They get on an elevator to ops, and this question is answered fairly quickly upon their arrival in ops. They briefly touch on the idea of it being Odo.
Mr. Bunkin?
But that's still too hot of a potato. But they get to ops, and...
I never know what to bring to these things.
I brought a six-pack of beer, but it's not really beer. It's just part of me that I made look like a six-pack of beer. And now I'm embarrassed that I don't actually have any beer to serve. I don't want you to drink me.
One time I brought a bouquet of flowers, and I just ended up resting my arm in the middle of the table the entire evening.
Could you drink some of Odo? And when it passed out of you, could it reintegrate with him?
I mean, that's...
If you did the blood test on Odo and it went gold, could you knock that back like a shot and then have it be available to him to be part of his body again later?
I wonder if he could summon that separate piece of himself through you.
Oh.
Either in a motility enhancement, like it just zooms through you in the way that anything would, or if he could withdraw it from you, like through your chest or your esophagus, and if it could just shoot out in front of you.
If it goes through your butthole, then Dr. Odo is definitely the person you want to see if you've got a constipation issue.
Right.
Because he could just get you moving again.
Yeah, that's he's like castor oil. You could sell Odo in a health food store.
Milk of magnesia, eat your heart out.
Welcome to the tummy temple.
Don't mind the smell.
Yeah.
He'd be very popular in parts of Beverly Hills, I imagine.
Sure, yeah.
Have you ever had a shapeshifter colonic?
I'm sure it would feel incredible.
They get some indications on the instruments up in ops that somebody is attempting to beam in. No ships are in range to beam in, which kind of defies the establishing shot of the station that we saw at the beginning of the episode, which showed lots of ships around the station.
Yeah, that is unusual.
A little bit of a mismatch between the visuals and the dialogue. But sure enough, somebody materializes on the platform and they're kind of like hunched over, facing the wrong way, like a preteen dancer about to participate in a talent show.
Sometimes I doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion.
I thought this person was in the Terminator crouch, you know, complete with the static and lightning of the beam in.
Yeah.
It felt very Terminator to me.
But unlike the Terminator, this person has a gun.
Right.
Adam, it's Vagrant Beryl.
He's got a gun, you guys. You know what? Maybe the most horrifying part of seeing Vagrant Beryl here holding a disruptor is that he's showing emotion.
Yeah. A very different type of character for Philip Englund. I mean, we know everybody from the Mirror Universe is sort of the opposite of their Prime Universe counterpart. So it would stand to reason that Mirror Beryl would be a passionate and somewhat textured character.
Yeah, and in contravention of every other time we've ever seen him, we get a interesting version of Beryl to theme.
This is one of these things that we deal with the Mirror Universe, is that people that are dead on one side are not necessarily dead on the other.
Uh-huh.
We've dealt with that with Sisko's wife. We've dealt with that with Odo. Now we're going to deal with it with Kira's... It's kind of a tropey episode premise, right?
Oh, yeah.
But a trope that is like native to Deep Space Nine specifically. They're doing the what if you met somebody that was dead on the other side, but in this universe.
I really like the order. Like, we've talked a lot about album sequencing as it relates to a season. I really like the order that this episode is coming in.
Yeah.
Because I could not wipe the smile off of my face watching this entire thing play out. I love that Vagrant Barile, like, as soon as he shows up on the station, is doing that thing where he asks for a helicopter to meet him on the roof and, like, the bag of money. Like, yeah. What kind of fucked up heist is this?
They've had enough heists on Deep Space Nine that it seems like they've actually put some security measures in place to deal with it.
Uh-huh.
Because when Sisko radios down to Odo for the chopper, he has some radio code for that, 71 green, which means, yeah, get him the chopper, but have you and a couple more security people be waiting for him on it.
I love when Odo shows up. He's like, I don't necessarily have a problem with you holding ops at gunpoint, but I really don't like how you've wrapped your arm around Kira.
That's one thing I can't forgive.
Yeah. So we get a long walk with Kira and Vagrant Barile where she attempts to glean some information out of him.
Yeah, they're not going to take the elevator because he doesn't trust it. I mean, he says that they could just turn off the turbo lift and they'd be trapped inside. I always wonder about what a transporter could do in a situation like this.
Yeah.
Is because, like, you never see somebody, like, hugging somebody that gets transported away. It seems like maybe the transporter, like, I mean, you see two people get transported that close, but never one but not the other. So you wonder if, like, the annular confinement beam would be incapable of distinguishing at that close proximity between two bodies or something.
Yeah, you gotta believe that your hand's gonna feel a little melty if you attempted to do it that way.
Describe the disorder, transporter psychosis.
The long walk is a great opportunity for them to get to know each other a little bit and
get some steps in.
Yeah, and for Barile to sort of get his bearings. He is not totally sure that he has arrived in Prime Universe, so he needs to ply Kira for a little bit of information.
You're not with the Alliance, are you?
They get to climb 57 stories on a ladder to get to the landing pad.
I wondered if it was down or up, because does it show?
Well, here's the thing. Like, we know Ops is in the hub part of the station, and when we cut to the exterior again and the runabout, we're on an upper docking pylon, so I just assumed it was up.
Wow. Shit. That's exhausting.
I don't think it makes it any easier at that number. Like, 57 stories in either direction, I think, is going to make you sore.
Do you think you could climb 57 stories on a ladder? Like, if right now somebody brought a 57-story ladder?
No question.
Do you think you could get up it?
Yeah.
Wow.
No doubt.
I don't think I could.
I think you could too. And the reason I say that is because I think at a certain height, your endorphins would be flooding into your bloodstream. You'd be so high and scared. Like, I think your body would act differently than it normally would. It wouldn't feel like just a stair climber in a gym situation.
I think you underestimate how sleepy I am, Adam.
Well, I mean, I can certainly hear it.
Gul Dukat.
So,
this is a bit that Kira has done, because by the time they get outside the doorway to the runabout, Kira has known the entire time that his gun is out of bullets.
Yeah. She spotted that something was cracked on his phaser.
You're not going to kill anyone, not with that disruptor. Power cell's cracked.
And now is as good a time as any to do some Kirk Fu on him. So she drops that axe handle on him and brings him to the ground.
Yeah, and then Odo rushes out, and they spirit him away to the jail cells, which he's very impressed with. This is like a 5-star jail cell as far as he's concerned.
He's been in them all.
What do you think are the, like, legal protections for an MU who comes into the Prime Universe? Does he have the right to remain silent? Does he have the right to an attorney? Or as a universal interloper, does he waive those rights?
I think it's like any time you travel to a foreign country, you're subject to the laws of the land.
Hmm. But if he like called the Mirror Universe State Department, the Mirror Universe embassy to Deep Space Nine, maybe they could like pull some strings and get him out.
That would be great. They should set up an embassy there.
That would be awesome. Why hasn't diplomatic ties been established between the Mirror Universe and the Prime Universe?
So I guess they have padded Vagrant Barile down because Kira is fondling the multi-dimensional transporter device that she lifted off of him.
Yeah.
And Vagrant Barile asks about his Prime Universe counterpart in this scene. He's interested in knowing what that person was like. And it's a question that just puts Kira to sleep almost immediately.
Yeah, she just collapses on the floor, and that's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
That prop, the multi-dimensional transporter device, looked like a Star Wars prop to me.
Yeah, it really did. And it's the red light, right? It's the dark metal and the red light, I think, that does it for me.
Yeah. It's very rare that you see something in Star Trek that looks like it's from a different sci-fi franchise, but that really did.
Barile asks for Kira to destroy this thing, so he has to stay. That's how much he likes his jail cell.
Yeah. That's not what Kira's going to do, though. So she goes up and talks to Ben Sisko, and they have a conversation about what it's like to reconnect with a dead flame, but the evil version.
I know what you're going through, Major.
Yeah, he knows exactly what that's like.
He's got some advice for her. I really liked this scene. This is the kind of scene I always want in an episode like this, where the characters talk about how weird it is and how it like fucks with your psyche to talk to somebody that looks exactly like the person you loved, but that isn't actually them.
We want these conversations all the time, like characters who have been through similar situations to share their stories. And that's why O'Brien...
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
Talks to Vagrant Barile in the jail cell. O'Brien famously being someone who spent a lot of time in prison.
Yeah. It's not the jail I hate. It's the man that it made me that I hate.
It's the fact that I now have to wear this giant fluffy beard for the rest of my life.
Yeah, Sisko knows how much trouble the Mirror Universe could get you into sexually.
Right.
So he has some advice of caution for Kira.
Yeah, he pushes across his desk the Mirror Universe brand condoms.
Guaranteed to get you pregnant.
Yeah. We sort of elliptically cut back to the promenade where Barile is a free man. We understand that this conversation didn't do a whole lot in convincing Kira to use the caution that Sisko is prescribing here.
Yeah, well, and she didn't press charges. She's the aggrieved victim of the alleged crime, and since she hasn't pressed charges, he's been let out, and he cleans up a little bit, but not that much, you know.
I feel like Vagrant Barile wears a far deeper V than Vedic Barile. Is that the case?
Yeah, Vagrant Barile is showing some cleavage off.
Yeah,
in a big way.
I one time bought a T-shirt that was too deep of a V like this, and I just found it unwearable. You sometimes ever buy an accidentally too deep V?
I think there was a time when I had some very deep Vs, and you know, like Brooklyn gets so hot in the summers that sometimes you're just like, I don't care. I need to be wearing less.
Uh huh.
You know,
take that V all the way down.
Take it all the way to the floor, baby. But
just make that V a cardigan T-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll only button the bottom button.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's not like a look that I put on to impress anybody. I'll say that.
I don't have
the chest that Vagrant Barile has, you know.
I was just going to say you need you need the right body for a V like that, and I don't have that.
Yeah. I've got a chest full of nubbins. I don't want people looking at that.
Vagrant Barile is getting all kinds of looks, the looks that a celebrity gets when they walk out in public. That's because he is kind of a celebrity. Vedic Barile was a famous person.
Yeah, he almost became the Kai.
Yeah, and so it's a fun bit of business seeing these compositions where he's out in public and seeing all the background actors react to him.
It's people seeing the guy they wish had been elected president walking around. Like, oh, God, at a time like this, it'd be really nice.
It's a fun bit of business here because Vagrant Barile is not a religious person whatsoever, and he's getting the credit for being one.
He doesn't seem to really even know that much about the Bajoran religion. And I think like later in the episode, it becomes clear that he maybe knows a little bit more than he's letting on. But it seems like the implication here is that the Bajoran religion essentially does not exist on the other side of the coin. The mirror universe doesn't have any analogous faith tradition on Bajor. And so he kind of goes into this as a total ignoramus, and Kira wants to invite him into services at the temple. He initially declines, but then finds his way in there. And this is actually, I think, our first trip to Bajoran church.
I think it is, because I was shocked to see that it was a galley-style temple.
Yeah, it kind of got the dimensions of one of those strip mall chapels that you see in like parts of the South. Very, very tiny little room.
We're refinishing the floors of this galley style temple. When you're not working with a lot of width, you want to be sure to align the boards lengthwise. You make the space look much larger than it is really.
We're drawing the eye toward the centerpiece at the end of the room, which is that Bajoran shape that you see everywhere. It seems to both be the symbol of their religion and their comm badge.
God, you know Rich Trithui would be in there like trying to do Bajoran religion during his time on the show. Like in the greatest way. Like I love like the part that makes his visit to the Motown Museum almost an equal proportion horrifying and fun is that he's so game for it.
Yeah.
And you know he'd be totally game for Bajoran religion.
Right. Yeah. He's like, he's going to bring that same level of boomer enthusiasm to anything he gets involved with.
I love him so much. Yeah, but this is scary, right? Like what Vagrant Barile does here is that there was a person sitting next to Kira, and then he either like he taps them out or it's understood.
It's kind of like
that,
can I cut in at a USO dance kind of deal?
Come on, buddy. Give the Navy a dance.
That part gave me the cringies.
Yeah. I feel like they could have just had there be a spare seat next to her that he could have come in and sat in.
I mean, the time to switch seats is probably during the peace of the world part of the ceremony, you know?
Oh, yeah. Peace be with you.
Yeah. Yeah, you can just cutsle up next to her at that point.
Is this a LeVar Burton directed episode?
It is.
Yeah. I wonder what motivated that choice. Because it's just a like, what's the blocking of this scene going to be? What are we going to have the extras doing? Kind of decision.
Yeah, I think he is in the regular well of directors on this show.
I'm not saying why did they decide to have him direct this. I'm saying why did he decide, or why did anyone decide to have an extra in that seat?
Yeah, that is a great question. It's an unanswerable question.
Because it's like, it's a moment that we both noticed. It bumped us like, wow, weird that somebody would be made to move in a, you know, in the middle of a religious ceremony.
Total bullshit, man. It's just bullshit.
And where did they go?
Yeah. They were just asked to leave. Sorry, this guy's more important. He's got lines. You don't.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that all of the Bajoran react shots that we see outside the temple are less so within that temple.
Right. Yeah.
And that would be a great reason for this person to have moved, right? Like, oh, shit, that's Vedic Barile?
Yeah. I'd be like if a McElroy, like, not that this would ever happen, but if a McElroy came into the audience of one of our live shows, like, people would be, you know, distracted, I think.
People would take the microphones from the stage and put them in front of whoever that McElroy was.
Yeah, yeah. And rightly so, I think. He's very curious to know, what's in the box? Because they bring in one of the orb cases, and she explains to him what the orbs are and what they mean to the Bajoran people.
Yeah.
This will become important later.
Kira is kind of the religious Sherpa to Vicar Beryl throughout the episode. Because after the ceremony, they kind of post-game it in the hallway. And,
yeah, it's a lot like taking somebody to like a sporting event that they've never seen that sport before. Like, oh yeah, so this is the batter. He's going to try and hit the ball, and then he's going to see if he can get to first, second, third. You know, like, she's both giving him like the play-by-play of how it works, but also like the top level, like, oh yeah, this team is trying to go here.
It's very difficult to explain the infield orb rule.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pair.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
Kira is answering a bunch of questions posed by Vagrant Beryl, but Beryl also answers a question that Kira has had for a long time, and that question is, who should Kira invite to this dinner at the Worf Dax residence?
Do you like Klingon food?
They're serving Klingon food, and that's like a smash cut to this hang, which Beryl, Dax, and Kira are having a great time at, and Worf is having a terrible time at.
There's something in Worf's attitude here that is very familiar to me as a semi-frequent let's have dinner with her work friends social arrangement.
Yeah.
But as the scene plays out, what you understand is it's not that Worf is upset that Vagrant Beryl is at his dinner table. It's the story he's telling of stealing a mechleth from a Klingon warrior that he doesn't believe.
It's sort of insulting Worf's sense of pride as a Klingon.
Right.
That's one hell of a story.
And that is all it is, a story.
And Vagrant Beryl is not really at pains to put Worf at ease, because the whole thing is about stealing a mechleth from a Klingon, which Worf rejects categorically as a thing that would even be possible. And then Vagrant Beryl really fucking drags him by stealing Worf's own mechleth to cut the dessert cake.
He does close-up magic.
Oh my god, this is crazy. You're David Blaine.
During dessert.
Pulls it out of Worf's ear.
And Worf just starts running. Like, he just runs out of the room. It's great.
Yeah.
I love how he slices through that, what is that, a flan? Like
a, kind of a gelatinous substance. Yeah, maybe a creme caramel.
Yeah.
But with red food coloring in it.
That looked good.
It looked okay. I'm partial to a creme brulee personally. Yeah. I want that crunchy texture.
I mean, that could have been a crumb crust at the bottom.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
But you know that blade's gonna have to be sharp to cut through that crumb.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's gonna be like sushi knife sharp.
Right, right.
Worf keeps his blade, you know, in good shape.
This is how you earn Worf's respect. Though, because I think there's a begrudging kind of, well, all right then, kind of vibe to Worf during the dessert course.
Get the fuck out of my house, but also game recognize game.
Yeah. How does the saying go? My game will recognize your game.
Did you see that Worf had his champion standing Batleth trophy up on the wall?
I love it. That's where it belongs. That scene?
Yeah. Very proud of Worf.
I was triumphant.
On the walk home, Kira and Vagrant Beryl talk about what a gift having good friends is. And then the conversation goes super sad when Vagrant Beryl takes it in a must be nice kind of direction conversationally.
Yeah. Yeah. This is one of those pitfalls where you... You realize that you're just like salting the wound of the person you're talking to accidentally.
Kira's like, boy, I sure do like friends. They're the best.
Somehow this doesn't ruin Kira's chances with Vagrant Beryl, though, because she invites him in for Ractigino. And anyone who's watched Seinfeld knows Ractigino is not Ractigino. Ractigino is sex.
It's very true, and we get to see it. I mean, yeah. not it, but we get to see the prelude to it.
He doesn't take it out.
Right, because inside Kira's apartment, Vagrant Brile has regaled Kira with the with like what is pretty awful pillow talk, to be honest. The story of a woman he knew who got killed at a bar that they were at by a drunken Cardassian with a disruptor. And it's a story that it's a story that absolutely floods Kira's basement for some reason.
Yeah, who knew? Who knew this was the path to her heart?
Yeah, it really does the trick because
I have some grim and terrifying tales as well.
If I had only known.
Are you saying that being a huge bummer is the way to get Kira to sleep with you? If so, what have I been doing the last six seasons but being a huge bummer?
Yeah, we get that fun gauzy fade to the next morning.
Yeah.
And it's hard to tell if Vagrant Brile is wearing his V-neck or not because his V-neck was so big before. He does look like he's shirtless here, though.
Yeah. He's eating some alvas, some type of nut from Bajor.
Is Prime Universe food less filling? That seems to be the context we're getting here.
Maybe less filling, but also tastier. He says that nothing in the MU tastes as good as this stuff. And you have to think like he's probably been fed like Kelpian gills and stuff. He's probably had to eat some pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah, that's true. But also, Kira's going to make you work, I bet. Yeah. Working up an appetite.
Yeah. I was just wishing he would do like a bit like, these are good alvas, but what do you know about D's alvas?
Yeah. Yeah, I would like him a lot more if he had done that.
If he was funny, you know? That would also be opposite of Prime Universe Brile, so they could have done it.
Yeah. You know what? Vagrant Brile does have some self-awareness in this scene because he pivots. He's like not a great... He's that guy that talks about the thing you're not supposed to talk about at the time that he's talking about it. Because
right.
In the morning after, he decides, is when he's going to ask about how weird it must be for Kira to have lost her boyfriend and then be fucking that boyfriend at this moment.
This must be very strange for you.
No misstep is not taken, and yet she is totally enraptured with him.
You know, at least Vagrant Brile is trying some things.
Yeah.
You know, Vedic Brile would never even begin a conversation with anyone.
Yeah, he's just doing a Sudoku off in the corner.
Uh-huh.
Later that morning, Bashir arrives in ops to find out whether Kira got fucked or not.
Thought I might stretch my legs, see what was happening in ops.
Kira hasn't shown up yet.
he brings a pad of information up that he could very easily have emailed, and everybody calls him on it.
He's wearing a bandolier of speculums to ops.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this? I just wear it just in case.
In case anyone's vagina needs to be examined.
Julian, Kira's personal life is her own.
I'll also need a urine sample.
He's like wheeling a squeaky exam table with like stirrup sticking at the end of it. Through ops. Like banging it into the walls and like trying to get it out of the elevator.
Yeah.
I had to use the service elevator.
Yeah. She's perfectly happy to let everybody know that it went down last night.
Yeah.
And they're all happy to hear it. They're happy for her.
Worf appears to have won a gentleman's bet.
Yeah.
You think Worf could have smelled it? Like, we know that about Klingons, right? Really hypersensitive sense of smell.
Oh. He can smell when somebody's gotten busy?
Yeah, I bet.
Damn.
I bet he could. So Kira and Brile have plans for date number two, and seems a little soon to make date number two orb experience. I like to save orb experience for like the fifth or sixth date when
yeah.
you know the person extra well and you have time to like wash your orb
yeah.
really well.
You know that they're not going to say anything embarrassing to your orb.
Right. Yeah, they aren't going to have any awkward observations about it or
yeah, yeah.
It's asymmetry.
Orbs sort of have a flared base and a flared top, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing to do after your orb experience is get a piece of pie and talk about the orb.
Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
Yeah, in the basement of the Bajoran temple, there's always a little bit of a potluck. just hang out and talk about the ceremony.
He's very perplexed by what he's experienced, and he wants to unpack it with Kira, and it's a... she's kind of Morpheus as him, right? Like what yeah. was said was for you and you alone. Like don't try and explain it or understand it fully. Like it's gonna take time to process.
Yeah, this is the only time in the episode where Vagrant Beryl has lost his appetite.
he takes this one moment to stop shoving food in his maw.
Yeah. So Vagrant Beryl goes back to his quarters and relaxes in the IKEA chair that everyone had in the late 90s. And in walks Mirror Universe Kira from around the corner.
Yeah. Catsuit Kira, Darth Kira, is here. They did not detect her beaming in whenever she did that.
Nope.
But yeah, they are in cahoots and their scheme is to steal the orb.
Yeah.
And the scheme is going well. Right on schedule.
The scheme does go well, Enterprise.
She starts laying some smooches on him, and he kind of pulls the "I have a headache"
mm-hmm.
thing. Like, yeah, let's save that for another time. I kind of was up all night doing that with other you, but yeah, we're gonna get this orb. It's gonna go great.
Yeah, I mean, if she smelled Beryl's dick, then like he's not gonna be in trouble, right?
Right. Yeah. It smells exactly like she would hope it would smell.
Let's have a smell, all right. Oh, everyone likes their own brand, don't they? This is magic.
There's this weird tension of like Mirror Universe Kira is a little bit hot about the idea of Vagrant Beryl banging Prime Kira, but also like it's accusatory, but encouragingly accusatory.
Mm-hmm.
And Vagrant Beryl is not wanting to fucking tell.
Yeah. I think this is, for all the sins of this episode, it is just a fun showcase for Nana Visitor to do a lot of different shit. And
yeah.
She has a ton of fun with it.
She's great. She's great at this. And later on, especially, there's a lot to talk about in terms of her performance.
I mean, this scene is bonkers because she goes back and forth between like wanting to fuck him, hugging him, kissing him, trying to punch him.
Yeah.
Villain monologuing to him. It's amazing.
This plan also makes a lot of sense in a give me an evil plan that you could describe in its entirety in one sentence. And the idea of stealing a Prime Universe or bringing it back to the Mirror Universe and then becoming a deity for it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, he's going to become the leader of a Bajoran jihad.
Yeah.
And the orb is going to give him the kind of credibility to do it. And she's going to be the power behind the throne, as it were.
If he's able to successfully bring it back over there, he'd become the Beryl.
he would indeed.
Beryl does that thing that Damar used to do, which is when he's really turning a thing around in his head. He goes straight to Quarks and gets yeah. hammered in his almost silent bar.
Yeah, there are a lot of Bajorans hanging around in Quarks, and there are some dropped jaws at the presence of this guy. And he has put on a real act drunk here. Like he is really shithouse.
Someone needs to put a slip into the jukebox or something. It is just extremely awkward. Quark proposes a kind of Santa Claus in the shopping mall money-making scheme to Mirror Universe Beryl. In a, you know, if you just wander around the promenade taking pictures with people, we could
clean up around here.
Make a little bit of scratch.
Yeah.
But the pitch does not go well because...
Much like don't bullshit a bullshitter, Mirror Universe Brile is like, don't evil scheme an MU.
Yeah.
My evil scheme is much eviler and grander of scale.
Yeah, Vigrid Brile kind of goes conversational O'Brien here in that he doesn't like how Quark or his plan makes him feel about himself.
Yeah, the pitch falls on deaf ears. And I don't know, the utility of Quark in this scene was pretty well executed, I thought.
In the cargo bay, Quark, it seems, has gone directly from the bar to the cargo bay where Kira is.
Yeah.
And chats her up about Vagrant Brile. He shares some unsolicited advice with her based on his experience as a bartender that their relationship isn't going to be all grapes and fucking. It's going to be awkward in parts, and he knows this because of his years of experience observing people.
He's a little different, isn't he?
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
He's a keen observer of the human/Bajoran condition.
Yeah. I thought this was a solid.
Yeah.
Like, Quark can see this train wreck coming.
Yeah. The going back over memory lane with Vedic Brile and Chakar as previous boyfriends was also fun because Quark like really nails how boring they were.
They lacked fire, excitement.
I love that. But you know what's missing from this scene is that Kira fucking hates Quark.
Yeah. The revulsion seems to have been set aside for this moment.
Right. I think this is an example of how vulnerable Kira is. Because I think ordinarily she wouldn't give Quark the time of day here, but this Vagrant Brile has made her feel a way that allows it in a way that it ordinarily wouldn't happen.
Also, like the recent Dominion/Cardassian occupation has got to have been very traumatic for her, and the temptation of just getting back into a comfortable rhythm with somebody who passed away has got to be really powerful for a character like Kira.
Her best friend's getting married. Yeah. Everyone's pairing off and she's not.
Yeah. She's really the Kristen Wiig to Dax's Maya Rudolph.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
That's what's going on here.
Morn. Dear sweet. Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
We cut to Barile's quarters where MU Kira has switched into Prime Kira costume. We know that this is her because she's still got the tiara in her hand and she tosses that aside. But from here on in, they're going to be indistinguishable from each other.
Must have been your lifelong ambition.
This was the scene built to showcase Nana Visitor's acting skill, right?
Yeah.
Like by putting her in the same costuming and then just tweaking the performance a little bit. I think this has got to be one of an actor's greatest challenges, right? Like acting just a little bit different from normal feels a lot like act drunk.
Right. I found myself wondering watching this episode, because we talk about like how virtuosic she is a lot. Mm-hmm. Is she the kind of person that gets this script and is really excited for all the fun and games her various characters will go through? Or is she like a worker and like, you know, like goes like, oh man, like I'm gonna have to do a lot in this episode. This is like a lot has landed on my plate this week at the office.
I hope we get to ask her that someday.
Yeah.
I'd really like to figure that out. I want to chop that up with her.
That would be really cool.
We are 7 minutes from the end of the episode at this point, Ben, which is bonkers because now is the point where we see the plan go into motion finally. Brile enters the temple and he hits some buttons and Mirror Universe Kira gets stopped by a guard outside the cargo bay. She is challenged to give up the authorization code that all people have to use since the Dominion War. And this answers a question we've had for a long time, which is how people are freely able to wander the station without getting checked to see if they're a gold or not. And it turns out it's a verbal check.
Yeah.
It's like in-person one password.
Yeah, and she says, I forgot how the code goes, but she's also experiencing some discomfort in her shoulders. She's sustained an injury in the hollow suite, so she asked this guard for a shoulder massage, which he is not canny enough to realize would be a big problem with the Bajoran Resources Department. Uh-huh. So he starts providing this massage, and she elbows him in the belly and then knocks him in the noggin, knocks him out.
This guy, Scott Strozier, is the actor who plays this guard. And
the Scott Strozier?
I know. I hesitated to even say the name, knowing that this would lead us down a tangent, but... this guy is like one of those guys that has a dozen Star Trek credits. He's in a lot of episodes.
He played a security officer in Star Trek First Contact. Yeah. Also.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Really great. He's just, if you need a shirtless guy in your Star Trek episode, look no further than Scott Strozier.
So she starts getting the transporter ready for the transdimensional transport. Brial cracks the security field on the box that the orb is in, but then Prime Universe Kira catches him. She's played a hunch, has gone to the temple, and she catches him red-handed with that box. And boy, I thought the instant this happened, I was like, oh man, like she anticipated this somehow. There's going to be a dummy orb in that mm-hmm. zombie box, mm-hmm. like. This is, they're going to let them get away with nothing. Yeah. And that's going to be the game. And that is not the game.
No, the actual game is far lamer than that.
Because Mirror Kira shows up. It's the Kirk fight on Rurapente.
Yep.
I can't believe I kissed you.
Mirror Kira has the transporter device with her. And it's kind of the, it's like the bomb trigger that Dennis Hopper has at the end of Speed, where she can trigger it at any time.
Yeah. A little bit of a dead man switch, maybe.
Yeah. And yeah, they're going to take their orb and go. But Kira appeals to Vagrant Brile's morality here.
You can't let her have the orb. It's too dangerous.
And it seems that the experience he had with the orb actually changed him in some way.
I really wish this worked for me.
You wish you had that much faith in humanity? Bajoranity?
I wish this moment worked for me, because while I really appreciate that Kira gets to good guy monologue him, we get an entire episode of him just kind of tormented by what he's doing, but we don't really get, like we see him thinking about it, but we don't really see him going through the trauma of it. Like he never describes what the orb shows him. And so we're left to assume that maybe that's the reason why he's got second thoughts. And we see him just sort of sadly drinking in Quark's bar, thinking about it. Like, we see all of these moments of him where we're made to believe in retrospect that maybe he's developing the sort of doubts that come together in this scene. But I don't know if any of those separate scenes are enough to add up to what we're supposed to believe is what's going on here.
I feel like if we hadn't had the B storyline of the dinner party, we might have had more time to get under his skin. Because, like, you're right. Like, the structure of the episode is really weird. Like, when the heist is put in motion, we have almost no time left.
Yeah.
I think he shoots Mirror Kira at, like, the 42-minute mark in a 44-minute episode.
Yeah.
And then they have to post game that a little bit, and he talks about how much fucking trouble he's going to be in when he and she beam back to the mirror universe empty-handed. But and he's like, it's for the best, and it's like, is it for you? Like, why don't you stay here or not beam back with her? Or
it's not that it's unmotivated, it's not motivated by what we've seen during the show. Like, Vagrant Brile talks about what he saw in the orb as being like him and Kira with a real life and a family, and that being the final straw, like as sort of a tease of a thing that he can never have. But that's not true. That's not true as long as he's in this universe. That's right. Not true based on everything we saw in the episode up until then.
He says that
eventually I'd find some way to ruin it.
Which is something we will have to take his word for, and I wish we didn't.
I mean, the primary way that he ruined his plan is by going back to the mirror universe without the orb.
Yeah.
Why did he do that?
I don't know.
Hey, you want to know how you get a slap on the wrist instead of like 20 years in an agonizer booth? Bring the orb back with you, Vigrant Varile.
Yeah. Yeah. Or bring a dummy orb and be like, fuck, they tricked us.
Yeah. Yeah. Vigrant Varile is kind of dumb.
Well, maybe that's why he's a vagrant, Adam. Do you ever consider that?
You really want to do this here, now? Okay, let's do it. Do it.
Did you consider whether or not you like the episode?
I did. I think that to your point, that this was kind of a nice light episode, relative to some of the other recent episodes, but also, despite its flaws, way better than the average turkey in season one or two, for example. You know, I think I'll take an excuse to get Kira, you know, doing all of this fun stuff. And I think for that reason, on balance, I do kind of like the episode.
Look, I agree with you about giving Nana Visitor a centerpiece ep to do her thing. But it feels like when it's Mirror Universe action, it's cheap heat for her in a way that, like, I might have preferred a scene that fully developed what happened between her and Odo from the last episode.
Yeah.
To chop it up. Right. But this does not dispute any of the other things you mentioned about this ep being like fun and light and consequence free, which ultimately it is.
It feels like it's such an interesting thing when you have a 6 or 7 episode arc at the beginning of the season to then run back to the safe territory of bottle episodes as a writer's room.
No,
It's like it's like their instincts are all still serial and they haven't broken out of that yet.
I am totally down for something light and inconsequential as like show to show. And I realized that I might have been unusually hard on this episode, but I think the one place that I'm the least forgiving about this show and when I watch TV and movies is when a character acts against their own stated motivations, especially in close proximity to those motivations being stated, you know, moments ago or an episode or two ago. And what do we have here but Kira doing the very thing she got angry at Odo about when he was enthralled with the change leader, right? She goes and she falls for someone and does not have her guard up in the way that she should, even though Sisko tells her to keep her guard up, even though she saw what happened to Odo when he let his guard down. It's a convenient amnesia that makes it hard to enjoy a lighter show like this one is maybe meant to be enjoyed, right?
Well put. Do you want to see if we have any Priority One messages?
Yeah, we got to do that. That's one thing we never forget about.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of P1s here. The first one is of a promotional nature. It goes like this. Do you like Sherlock Holmes? Come join two friends of DeSoto as they read through and discuss the entire Holmes canon on The Final Podblum. The book club podcast that's as fun to listen to as it is difficult to say. Hear the origins of Britain's first cheetah prime minister, how Sherlock predicted Star Trek, and what on earth Garadeb is in this weekly dive into the only thing people have to pass the time before the holodecks. Find The Final Podblum in your podcatcher of choice and on Twitter at The Final Podblum. And it's like a problem, but if you spelled it with pod instead of pra. The game is afoot. All our buddies.
What's great about naming your show something like this is that you know the website, the Twitter handle, everything's available. No one's taken this.
Nobody is going to be using your hashtags in a way that you disapprove of.
That sounds like a ton of fun.
Yeah, that does sound fun.
They're right. It's so much more fun to listen to than it is to say Podblum. Podblum.
Yeah, got to check that out.
Ben, our second Priority One message is of a personal nature. It is from Blondie and Marbles. It is for Wixter, and the message goes like this. Wixter, Malort plus Gammeldansk equals you are the drunkest Shimoda.
Wow.
Good luck in Milan. And then in parentheses, it says whales, space whales, space whales. May you successfully run a marathon without your nipples bleeding or any visits to Six Bay. On, Blondie and Marbles.
Wow.
Good luck in Milan, indeed. Wixter.
Yeah, the north of Italy is that can't be that marathon can't still be on, can it?
I have my doubts about that.
Well, either way, our best to Wixter. And thanks to Blondie and Marbles and the final Podblum for getting priority one messages. If you'd like to get a P1, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And we really appreciate it because it is one of the ways we keep the lights on around here. Get that gold press light.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
If you scrub your show to 13 minutes and 40 seconds, you will find one of my favorite kinds of things. I really like watching a show like this where there's a lot of background acting. The idea that you know there's been, you know, there's a call time for extras.
Uh-huh.
You're directing them. You're giving them an idea of what to do. And you occasionally get foreground and background actors.
Yeah.
And I love how alive a scene looks when you place them very specifically. sometimes though, an extra does something physical that doesn't make a lot of sense in the context of the show. And this extra reading the mall map of the promenade with her finger is such a choice. Like,
yeah.
It's a choice that you're making in order to look like you're doing a thing without actually being motivated by the need to do that thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like oftentimes an extra is told to act, but not act too big. This mall map extra is being told to consult the mall map in order to find a place to go. And they're just doing it in a way that serves the physicality of what that thing would look like. But I don't believe that that's what this looks like.
I like that. That's a great Shimoda. My Shimoda is one of the Bajoran dudes at the bar when Brielle goes to Taiwan on.
Mm-hmm.
This guy in the red shirt, kind of in the background, fully just like jaw dropped, staring at him for an extended portion of the beginning of this scene. This guy did not get directed to not act too big.
Quark's got to kick these people out if they're not going to do any drinking. That's on him, I think.
Yeah.
Well, what is coming up for us on the next episode of The Greatest Generation, Ben?
Next episode is season 6, episode 9, Statistical Probabilities. Genetically engineered savants under Bashir's supervision predict doom for the Federation.
Wow.
Okay, Adam. Well, I'm going to head over to gach.biz/game, where we keep the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets. And currently our runabout is on square 35, directly between a Measure of a Man episode and a Kanar with Damar episode. I think those are the only... It looks like those are the only... I think Kanar with Damar is the only hazard ahead that we could potentially hit.
It makes me happy to see Philippa Louvois' face.
Yeah, dude, same.
A lot of great faces on this game board.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and roll this bad boy.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
And I have rolled a 3. So next week's episode, another regular old episode.
There you
No Kanar will be consumed with Damar.
Fair enough.
I'm really looking forward to it, man. In the meantime, we got to thank all of the friends of DeSoto who head to MaximumFun.org/join and support the show on a monthly basis, especially in times when a lot of people are having financial difficulties imposed upon them. The folks that continue to support are really greatly appreciated. And they sure are.
Thanks for saving us until last as the thing to cut back on.
Yeah, and you're keeping this as a free thing that lots of people can enjoy in a very challenging time. So we really appreciate that. We also appreciate Bill Tilly, who makes comedy trading cards about every episode of the show. He uses the hashtag #GreatestGen over on Twitter, where his handle is BillTilly1973. He's also got like a Tumblr. He occasionally posts those things in other places. Adam is on Twitter @CutForTime. I'm on there @BenjaminAHR. There's vibrant Facebook communities, and there's a great Reddit sub about The Greatest Generation. There is a Wikia that is lovingly updated with all of the in-jokes from the show. All of that stuff is a great thing to spend an afternoon goofing off looking into.
What we're trying to say is, as you're spending time distanced from others, you don't have to be alone.
Yeah. Hang out with us on the internet.
It's what it's there for.
Also got to thank our buddy Adam Ragusea, who made a bunch of original theme music for the show. Of course, he based his work off of the original Picard song by Dark Materia. And Adam Ragusea is now probably more famous than Dark Materia, even, because he has a hugely successful cooking channel on YouTube. You can check that out by just searching Adam Ragusea on YouTube.
Yeah, slide into his comments. Say something nice.
Yeah.
He's putting out 2 videos a week, man.
He's killing it in the game.
You know what? These times are great for dabbling with the cooking at home.
Yeah, step up your home cooking game.
If you're feeling reluctant, his YouTube recipes and methods are easy and fun.
Yeah.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which no doubt depicts the first piss club meeting to occur on Deep Space Nine.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.